WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. My next guest is 88 years old, but she may be most well known among people 6 and under and their parents. But in addition to writing children's classics like Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day, Judith Fiorst has published novels, musicals, columns for the New York Times and Washington Post, and poetry collections, including a decades series starting with It's Hard to Be Hip Over 30. Who remembers that? She's here to talk about the latest installation of this series called Nearing 90 and Other Comedies of Late Life. Judith, it's an honor. Welcome to WNYC today.
Delighted to be here.
This is a poetry book, like other books in your decade series. Is there a reason to approach getting older in verse rather than in prose?
I think it enables me to laugh a little more frequently.
You started writing at age 30 to give people who don't know your work some context. When you look back at your work, do you recognize the person who wrote The Wonderful World of Science and your other earlier children's books?
There is a certain consistency over the decades. One is worrying. I've been very consistent about worrying. Two is weight. I've been weighing myself every day forever. And three is a feeling of profound connection to my family, to my friends, to the human beings who so enrich my life. Those things say the same, but a lot of complaining.
I see you've given us, you've agreed to read a sample of your writing from the new book, Nearing 90. I think you told my producer you would read the poem Attitude.
That's right. Should I do that now?
Please.
Okay. Once upon a time, I flirted. Smooth of skin, long-haired, tight-skirted, never satisfied with what I got. Foolish choices, duds I dated, bad vacations, jobs I hated. What did I complain about? A lot. Once upon a time, I twinkled. Now I'm achy, creaky, crinkled. Also, slow down, sidelined, out of touch. No stroke, no chemotherapy, and as of now, dementia-free. What's there to complain about? Not much.
Ha. Huh. Changing standards, huh?
Absolutely. And I really think that that's the most important thing to get you through your later life, particularly as I head toward 90, redefining your definition of good news, of happiness, of what makes you smile and feel good.
We look back at some of the poems from your earlier works, and so your description of your book on turning 40, so that would be 50 years ago, 1969 or so, described it as a look at, quote, that decade of sagging kneecaps and college reunions and fantasies of love in the afternoon at Maoist kids, cholesterol counts, adult education courses, and other atrocities. Ha. Huh. So
right.
From 90, did those atrocities seem less awful? Should 40-year-olds relax a little bit?
I think that being 40 and the decade of the 40s was the hardest decade, certainly for me. I mean, all of a sudden you realize that not everything was in the world was possible. You're not going to be a ballerina. You're not going to be a movie star. Paul Newman is not leaving Joanne for you. Mm-hmm. And even if you never get on a plane for the rest of your life, you're going to die someday. So this all hits you when you're 40. And you start assimilating it as the years go on. And by the time you get to where I am, you know, been there, done that, worried about it, tore your hair out about it. And now where I am, and I think where a lot of my friends are, is we are not going to spoil these precious days that we have left worrying about all the bad news that we can count up if we really set our mind to it. We're going to just like what we got. And I mean, it's sort of an obnoxious new phrase, but I'm going to use it anyway. I'm learning to count my blessings.
Hmm. It's a kind of resignation, though, right?
No, no, Brian. It is not. It's a redefinition. I have a poem in the 90s book about a couple, a very long married couple sitting at a Japanese restaurant watching two newly in love young lovers at the next table, and he's stroking her hair, and she's got her finger rubbed down on his lower lip, and they're eating from each other's plates. And the older couple is looking at that and saying, you know, we don't mind. No, we did that. And we don't mind not being mm-hmm. that couple anymore. But mm-hmm. an old, familiar, comfortable with each other couple sharing sashimi and a hot and spicy and very sweet life.
Yes. And in your book about being 60, so that was 30 years ago, you wrote that it's an age where you'd give up a night of wild rapture with Denzel Washington for a nice report on my next bone density test. Ha. So
right.
Thinking about the cholesterol counts and the cholesterol counts and
sagging kneecaps.
The sagging kneecaps, thank you. And then by 60, it's the bone density test, and then whatever. Now, it kind of reveals or gives us a little window on how young we are when we start thinking about how old we are.
That's absolutely true. And by the time you get to my age, you feel as if, well, if they were giving out PhDs for going to doctors, you know, I'd have a PhD in doctors because you spend so much time with them. And everything, everything is fraught, and you can choose to walk around feeling fraught, or you can say, okay, all right, you know, I can handle this. I've handled a lot in almost 90 years.
Listeners, we can take a few phone calls for Judith Viorst. Her new book is Nearing 90 and Other Comedies of Late Life. You can call in with a question or a story. Are you turning 90 or over 90 or know someone who is? What observations on that stage of life do you want to share with your fellow listeners, or sort of the arc of life in the ways that Judith Viorst has been articulating them here? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. In your poem, My Stuff, you write about how hard it is to let go of physical things, just as it is hard to let go of things in your head. What's the difference?
Well, I think what happens is you start pulling out your investment in, you know, the books of your childhood. I still have a collection. It's unbelievable. I still have this collection of 78 RPM records of, you know, Ella Fitzgerald and of Bing Crosby. And I can't quite give them up. I've sort of theoretically given them up. But to actually let them out of my possession is going to take a little work. I'll do it, particularly if I have to move. I'll do it. But a lot of the things that feel just materialism, like materialism, they're stuff, you know, carry so many emotional memories with them.
We have a member of the New York City Council who wants to ask you a question.
Okay.
It's Helen Rosenthal of Manhattan. Councilwoman,
hi. You know, Judith, I really just want to let you know how important you were in my teenage life when I was on the speech team and thinking very hard about what to memorize and what speech to give. And I chose your book, Alexander and the Terrible, Awful, No Good, Very Bad Day, because it resonated it really resonated for me, and I felt it would resonate for others. And I've lost touch with your work, but now that I'm hearing about your work over your lifespan, I hear that it continues to resonate. And I just want to thank you for writing and for sharing your wisdom with the rest of us.
Oh, my. Thank you so much for those kind words. I really loved hearing that.
Bob in Rego Park. You're on WNYC with Judith Fiorist. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Brian. I'd like to ask you, at this age, do you have any fear of death, and do you believe in reincarnation?
I don't have a belief in reincarnation, and some days I worry about death more than others. You know, as I said a few minutes ago, I am trying very hard not to bring fear and anxiety into these precious dwindling days. I want to love them all, and, you know, not in some kind of dramatic way, oh, seize every moment, but just sort of slow down and enjoy what I have, and not let my fears, which pop up from time to time, take away from the pleasures that are available to me.
Jamie in Rockaway, New Jersey. You're on WNYC. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, yes. I was calling because of the story you just told about the young couple that you were sitting next to at a sushi restaurant.
Yeah.
So I had a very similar experience of, you know, me and my wife being the younger couple next to an older couple, and it was in really close quarters, and, you know, we did have that kind of exchange. Where did you get the inspiration for that poem?
I got it from a Japanese restaurant that I was in. It probably wasn't you, but let's pretend that it was. That's a nice thought.
Okay. All right. You don't want to tell me which one?
Oh, you know, a restaurant in Washington, D.C. called Sushiko.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess there's those experiences happening all over the place.
I think they are.
You can live in the spiritual synchronicity of it all, Jamie. Thank you very much. Jamie, do you have a neighbor named Tamini?
No.
Oh, okay. Because it's not often that we get two calls in a row from Rockaway, New Jersey, but our next call is Tamini in Rockaway. You're on WNYC with Judith Fiorist. Hi, Tamini.
Hey, Brian. I love your show. I wanted to share that my mother just died a month ago at 101, and she often said that her 90s were her best decade. And, you know, it was really very sincere. She saw it as a time to be who she was. She didn't have the concerns that you do when you're much younger. And reflecting what the caller was saying about your 40s being so difficult and your 60s, she stopped with the bone density. She stopped with so many doctors. It was more like, I'm going to play bridge. I'll go out to dinner. I'm reading the New York Times and watching CNN. And I'm enjoying myself.
And she still lived to 101, even without the doctors.
I completely share your mother's perspective on this. I sort of stunned myself. Somebody was asking me questions a few months ago and said, what's your favorite time of life? And without even knowing I was going to say it, I said, right now. And for very much the same reasons as your mother, I too have given up on the bone density tests, and I am enjoying all of the everyday pleasures of life. I'm paying a lot of attention to what's here and now, not worrying about what's going to happen next, not immersed in the past, just loving my life. I'm lucky. I'm lucky that I'm able to do that.
Sarah in Deer Park, you're on WNYC with Judith Fiorist. Hi, Sarah.
You don't remember this, but many years ago, right after Necessary Losses came out, and I read it, I called you on the phone, and your lovely husband answered the phone, and I got to speak to you and thank you for that book. But that book opened up a doorway for me, and I wanted to tell you how much you have just affected so many wonderful people's lives in such a wonderful way to know that everything changes. It's the only constant in our lives. And the loss that you talk about, which is the change. And to celebrate what is to come, what has been, and carry with us all the wonderful things that we've been favored and bestowed upon us, and nothing stays the same ever. So thank you. Thank you so much.
You mean you looked up Judith Viorst in the phone book after you read her book and she was listed?
No, that was in the days when you could dial 411 and ask
that's
for a
right.
listing and give the number. It was about probably 25, 30 years ago.
A while ago. I love what you said. It's beautifully expressed. And again, I completely agree with what you said. And, you know, if we can be flexible enough, and sometimes we're less flexible than others, and if we can have a sense of humor, and, you know, I have a pretty good sense of humor, but sometimes it takes a while to get there. First I cry and I yell and I blame my husband and I carry on and then I laugh. But I think I get more quickly to laughter than I used to.
Thank you for your call, Sarah. Has your creativity changed as your age, as you've aged, you know, like the nature of it or anything like that?
Well, what has changed is my the pressure to get the next piece of writing out, the next thing. I there was never a time until recently when I had a book out that I wasn't already working on my next book and my next book and my next book. You know, this business of slow down and smell the roses seems impossible when you're juggling three kids and a marriage and a career. But I am slowing down and smelling the roses, and I don't have to have that next book on the front burner as I hand in this book to my publisher.
And
so in that sense, it's different. It's
and
nice.
In one of your poems, I think it's the title poem on Nearing 90, you write about how technology is surpassing you. And I'm curious if you found that technology, however you want to define it, has changed your readers.
Oh, God, technology is a very sore point in my life because as my granddaughter Olivia summed it up. She looked at me and she said, "You are so 20th century." And I am. So I'm not, I mean, I have mastered attachments and I feel so brilliant. And it's hard for me to imagine people reading what I write in anything but physical book. Paper, print, form. And, you know, I think this is pretty sophisticated that I'm talking to you on the radio.
On an ISDN line, as we call it, from NPR studios in Washington when I'm in New York. When you said I've mastered attachments, I thought you were making a profound psychological interpersonal statement, but then I realized you're talking about putting a Word document on an email.
Exactly right. You got it.
We have 30 seconds. Any particular younger writers you're reading these days?
Oh, I read everybody, and it would be impossible for me to pick anyone since I love them all. I read a lot of poetry. Love Billy Collins, who's a poet, and you give it to me, I'll read it.
Judith Viorst, best-selling children's author who also writes books for slightly older people. Her latest is Nearing 90 and Other Comedies of Late Life. Thank you so much. What a pleasure.
Thank you.